heavens, faster than a star racing across the sky. A roaring form careened into Iskra's bull. Those jaws came free of Abraxos's neck, and then they were falling, twisting. Manon had enough sense to grab onto the saddle, to cling with everything she had as the wind threatened to tear her from him. His blood streamed upward as they fell, but then his wings spread wide and he was banking, flapping up. He steadied enough that Manon swung into the saddle, strapping herself in as she whirled to see what had occurred behind her. Who had saved them? It was not Asterin. It was not any of the 13. But Petra Blueblood. And behind the heir to the Blueblood Witch Clan, now slamming into Morath's aerial legion from where they'd crept onto the battlefield from high above the clouds, were the Iron Teeth. Hundreds of them. Hundreds of Iron Teeth witches and their wyverns crashed into their own. Petra and Iskra pulled apart, the Blueblood heir flapping toward Manon while Abraxos fought to stay upright. Even with the wind, the battle, Manon still heard Petra, as the Blueblood heir said to her, "A better world." Manon had no words. None, other than to look toward the city wall, to the force trying to enter through the river grates. The walls, "Go!" Then Petra pointed to where Iskra had paused in midair, to gape at what unfolded. At the act of defiance and rebellion so unthinkable that many of the Morath Iron Teeth were equally stunned. Petra bared her teeth, revealing iron glinting in the watery sunlight. "She's mine." Manon glanced between the city walls and Iskra, turning toward them once more. Two against one, and they would surely smash her to bits. "Go," Petra snarled. And when Manon again hesitated, Petra only said,
"For Keely."
For the wyvern Petra had loved, as Manon loved Abraxos, who had fought for Petra to her last breath while Iskra's bull slaughtered her. So Manon nodded. "Darkness embrace you." Abraxos began soaring for the wall, his wingbeats unsteady, his breathing shallow. He needed to rest, needed to see a healer. Manon glanced behind her, just as Petra slammed into Iskra. The two heirs went tumbling toward the earth, clashing again, wyverns striking. Manon couldn't turn away if she wished. Not as the wyverns peeled apart and then banked, executing perfect razor-sharp turns that had them meeting once more, rising up into the sky, tails snapping as they locked talons. Up and up, Iskra and Petra flew, wyverns slashing and biting, claws locking, jaws snapping. Up through the levels of fighting in the skies, up through the Krokens and Iron Teeth, up through the wisps of clouds. A race, a mockery of the mating dance of the wyverns, to rise to the highest point of the sky, and then plummet down to the earth as one. Iron Teeth halted their fighting. Krokens stilled in midair. Even on the battlefield, Morath soldiers looked up. The two heirs shot higher and higher and higher, and when they reached a place where even the wyverns could not draw enough air into their lungs, they tucked in their wings, locked claws, and plunged headfirst toward the earth. Manon saw the trap before Iskra did. Saw it the moment Petra broke free, golden hair streaming as she drew her sword and her wyvern began to circle. Tight, precise circles around Iskra and her bull as they plummeted. So tight that Iskra's bull did not have the space to open its wings, and when it tried, Petra's wyvern was there, tail or jaws snapping. When it tried, Petra's sword was there, slashing ribbons into the beast. Iskra realized it then. Realized it as they fell and fell and fell, and Petra circled them, so fast that Manon wondered if the Blueblood heir had been practicing these months, training for this very moment, for the vengeance owed to her and Keely. The very world seemed to pause. Petra and her wyvern circled and circled, blood from Iskra's wyvern raining upward, the beast more frantic with every foot closer to the earth. But Petra had not opened her wyvern's wings either, had not pulled on the reins to bank her mount.
Pull out, Manon breathed. Bank now.
Petra did not. Two wyverns dropped toward the earth, dark stars falling from the sky.
Stop, Iskra barked.
Petra didn't deign to respond. They couldn't bank at that speed, and soon Petra wouldn't be able to bank at all, would break herself on the ground right alongside Iskra.
Stop!
Fear turned Iskra's order into a sharp cry. No pity for her kindled in Manon, none at all. The ground neared, brutal and unyielding.
You mad bitch, I said, stop!
200 feet to the earth, then 100. Manon couldn't get down a breath. 50 feet. And as the ground seemed to rise to meet them, Manon heard Petra's only words to Iskra, like they had been carried on the wind.
For Keely.
Petra's wyvern flung out its wings, banking sharper than any wyvern Manon had ever witnessed, rising up, wingtip grazing the icy ground before it shot back into the skies, leaving Iskra and her bull to splatter on the earth. The boom rumbled past Manon, thundering through the world. Iskra and her bull did not rise again. Abraxos gave a groan of pain, and Manon twisted in the saddle, her heart raging. Iskra was dead. The Yellowleg's heir was dead. It didn't fill her with the joy it should have, not with that vulnerable grate on the city wall under attack. So she snapped the reins, and Abraxos soared for the city walls, and then Sorrel and Vesta were beside her, Astarin coming in fast from behind. They flew low, beneath the Iron Teeth now fighting Iron Teeth, the Iron Teeth still fighting Krokins, aiming for the spots where the river flowed right up to their sides. Already, a longboat had reached them. Already, arrows were flying from the small grate, guards frantic to keep the enemy at bay. The Morath soldiers were so preoccupied with their target ahead that they did not look behind until Abraxos was upon them. His blood streamed past her as he landed, snapping with talons and teeth and tail. Sorrel and Vesta took care of the others, the longboat soon in splinters. But it was not enough, not even close.
The rocks,
Manon breathed, steering Abraxos toward the other side of the river. He understood. Her heart strained to the point of agony at pushing him. But he soared to the other side of the river and hauled one of the smaller boulders back across. The 13 saw her plan and followed, swift and unfaltering. Every one of his wing beats was slower than the last. He lost height with each foot they crossed the river. But then he made it, just as another group of Morath soldiers were trying to enter the small, vulnerable passage. Manon slammed the stone into the water before it. The 13 dropped their stones as well, the splashes carrying over the city walls. More and more, each trip across the river slower than the last. But then there were rocks piled up, breaking the surface, then rising above it, blocking out all access to the river tunnel. Just high enough to seal it over, but not give a leg up to the Morath soldiers swarming on the other bank. Abraxos's breathing was labored, his head sagging. Manon twisted in the saddle to order her second to halt piling the rocks, but Astarin had already done so. Her second pointed to the city walls above them.
Get inside.
Manon didn't waste time arguing. Snapping Abraxos's reins, Manon sent him flying over the city walls, his blood raining on the soldiers fighting there. He made it to the castle battlements before his strength gave out. Before he hit the stones and slid, the boom of impact ringing across Orinth. He slammed into the side of the castle itself, wings limp, and Manon was instantly freeing herself from the saddle as she screamed for a healer. The wound to his neck was so much worse than she'd thought. And still he'd fought for her, stayed in the skies. Manon shoved her hands against the deep bite wound, blood rushing past her fingers like water through a cracked dam. Help is coming, she told him, and found her voice to be a broken rasp.
They're coming.
The 13 landed, Sorrel sprinting into the castle to no doubt drag a healer out if she had to. And then there were 11 pairs of hands on Abraxos's neck, staunching the flow of his blood, pressing as one to keep that precious blood inside him while the healer was found. Manon couldn't look at them, couldn't do anything but close her eyes and pray to the darkness, to the three-faced mother as she held her hands over the bleeding gashes. Racing footsteps sounded over the battlement stones, and then Sorrel was there beside Manon, her hands rising to cover his wounds, too. An older woman unpacked a kit, warning them to keep applying pressure. Manon didn't bother to tell her that they weren't going anywhere. None of them were. Even while the battle raged in the skies and on the land below. Lysandra could barely draw in a breath, each flap of her wings heavier than the last, as she aimed for the place where she'd seen Manon Blackbeak and her coven go crashing to the castle battlements. She'd shifted into a wyvern herself, using the chaos of the Iron Teeth rebels' arrival as a distraction. But the draining of her magic had taken its toll. And the fighting, the wounds that even she could not staunch. Lysandra spied the two figures hauling a familiar golden-haired warrior up the castle stairs, just as she hit the battlements, the witches whirling toward her. But Lysandra willed herself to shift, forcing her body to do it one last time, to return to that human form. She'd barely finished shoving on the pants and shirt she'd stashed in a pack by the castle wall, when Wren Alsbrook and a Bane soldier reached the top of the battlements, a half-conscious Adian between them. There was so much blood on him. Lysandra ran for them, ignoring her deep limp, the splintering pain rippling in her left leg, in her right shoulder. Down the battlements, a healer worked on the injured Abraxos, the 13, coated in his blood, now standing vigil.
What happened?
Lysandra skidded to a halt before Adian, who managed to lift his head to give her a grim smile.
Volg, Prince, Wren said,
his own body coated in blood, face pale with exhaustion.
Oh, gods.
He didn't walk away, Adian rasped.
Wren snapped.
And you didn't rest long enough, you stupid bastard. You tore your stitches.
Lysandra ran her hands over Adian's face, his brow.
Let's get you to a healer.
I've already seen one,
Adian grunted, setting his feet on the ground and trying to straighten.
They brought me up here to rest.
As if such a thing was a ridiculous idea. Wren indeed unlooped Adian's arm from around his shoulder.
Sit down before you fall and crack your head on the stones.
Lysandra was inclined to agree. But then Wren said,
I'm heading back to the walls.
Wait!
Wren turned toward her. But Lysandra didn't speak until the Bane soldier helped Adian to sit against the side of the castle itself.
Wait,
she said again to Wren when he opened his mouth, her heart thundering, nausea coiling in her gut. She whistled, and Manon Blackbeak and the 13 looked her way. She waved them over, her arm barking in pain.
You're hurt,
Adian growled. Lysandra ignored him as the witches stalked over, so much blood and gore on all of them. She asked Manon,
Will Abraxos live?
A shallow nod, the witch queen's golden eyes dull. Lysandra didn't have it in her for relief, not with the news she'd flown back so desperately to deliver. She swallowed the bile in her throat, then pointed to the battlefield, to its dark, misty heart.
They have the witch tower up again. It's moving this way. I just saw it myself. The witches have gathered atop it.
Absolute silence. And as if in answer, the tower erupted. Not toward them, but skyward. A flash of light, a boom louder than thunder, and then a portion of the sky became empty. Where Iron Teeth, rebels and the faithful alike, had been fighting, where Crokins had been weaving between them, there was nothing. Just ash. Lysandra's voice broke as the tower continued moving, a straight, unbreakable line toward Orinth.
They mean to blast apart the city.
Hands and arms coated in Abraxos's blood, Manon stared at the battlefield. Stared at where all those witches, Ironteeth and Kraken fighting for either army, had just vanished. Everything her grandmother had claimed about the witch towers was true. And it was not Kaltane and her shadow fire that fueled that blast of destruction, but Ironteeth witches. Young Ironteeth witches who offered themselves up, who made the yielding as they leaped into the mirror-lined pit within the tower. An ordinary yielding might take out 20, 30 witches around her, maybe more, if she was older and more powerful. But a yielding amplified by the power of those witch mirrors? One blast, and the castle looming above them would be rubble. Another blast, maybe two, and Orinth would follow it. Ironteeth swarmed the tower, a vicious wall keeping the Krokins and rebel Ironteeth out. A few Krokins indeed tried to break through those defenses. Their red-clad bodies fell to the earth in pieces. Petra, now within the confines of her coven, even made a run for the tower, to rip it down. They were beaten back by a swarm of Ironteeth. The tower advanced, closer and closer. It would be within range soon. Another few minutes, and that tower would be close enough for its blast to reach the castle. To wipe away this army, this remnant of resistance, forever. There would be no survivors. No second chances. Manon turned to Asterin and said quietly,
I need another wyvern.
Her second only stared at her. Manon repeated,
I need another wyvern.
Abraxos was in no shape to fly. Wouldn't be for hours or days. Adian Ashriver rasped,
No one is getting through that wall of iron teeth.
Manon bared her teeth.
I am.
She pointed at the shapeshifter.
You can carry me.
Adian snarled.
No.
But Lysandra shook her head, sorrow and despair in her green eyes.
I can't. The magic is drained. If I had an hour.
We have 5 minutes,
Manon snapped. She whirled to the 13.
We have trained for this. To break apart enemy ranks, we can get through them. Take apart that tower.
But they all looked at one another, like they'd had some unspoken conversation and agreement. The 13 stalked toward their own mounts. Sorrel clasped Manon's shoulder as she passed, then climbed onto her wyvern's back, leaving Asterin before Manon. Her second, her cousin, her friend, smiled. Eyes bright as stars.
Live, Manon.
Manon blinked. Asterin smiled wider, kissed Manon's brow, and whispered again,
Live.
Manon didn't see the blow coming. The punch to her gut, so hard and precise that it knocked the wind from her, sent her to her knees. She was struggling to get a breath down, to get up, when Asterin reached Nereen and mounted the blue mare, gathering the reins.
Bring our people home, Manon.
Manon knew then what they were going to do. Her legs failed her. Her body failed her. As she tried to get to her feet, as she rasped, No! But Asterin and the 13 were already in the skies. Already in formation. That battering ram that had served them so well, spearing toward the battlefield, toward the approaching witch tower. Manon clawed her way to the battlement ledge and hauled herself to her feet, leaned against the stones, panting, trying to get air into her lungs so she might find some way to get airborne, find some Kraken and steal her broom. But there were no witches here, no brooms to be found. Abraxos remained unconscious. Manon was distantly aware of the Shifter and Prince Adian coming up beside her, Lord Wren with them. Distantly aware of the silence that fell over the castle, the city, the walls, as all of them watched that witch tower approach, their doom gathering within it. As the 13 raced for it, raced against the wind and death itself. A wall of iron teeth rose up before the tower, blocking their path. 100 against 12. Inside the witch tower, close enough now that Manon could see through the open archway of the uppermost level, a young witch in black robes stepped toward the hollowed interior. Stepped toward where Manon's grandmother stood, gesturing to the pit below. The 13 neared the enemy in their path, and did not falter. Manon dug her fingers into the stone so hard her iron nails cracked, began shaking her head, something in her chest fracturing completely. Fracturing, as the 13 slammed into the iron teeth blockade. The maneuver was perfect, more flawless than any they'd done. A lethal phalanx that speared through the enemy's ranks, aiming right for the tower. Seconds. They had seconds until that young witch summoned the power and unleashed the yielding in a blast of blackness. The 13 punched through the iron teeth, spreading wide, pushing them to the side. Clearing a path right to the tower, as Asterin swept in from the back, aiming for the uppermost level. Imogen went down first. Then Lynn, and Ghislaine, her wyvern swarmed by their enemy. Then Thea and Kaya, together, as they had always been. Then the green-eyed demon twins, laughing as they went. Then the shadows, Edda and Briar, arrows still firing, still finding their marks. Then Vesta, roaring her defiance to the skies. And then Sorrel, Sorrel who held the way open for Asterin, a solid wall for Manon's second as she soared in, a wall against whom the waves of iron teeth broke and broke. The young witch inside the tower began glowing black, steps from the pit. Beside Manon, Lysandra and Adian wrapped their arms around each other, ready for the end, heartbeats away. And then Asterin was there. Asterin was barreling toward that open stretch of air for the tower itself, bought with the lives of the 13, with their final stand. Manon could only watch. Watch and watch and watch, shaking her head as if she could undo it, as Asterin removed her leathers, the shirt beneath. As Asterin rose in the saddle, freed of the buckles, a dagger in hand as her wyvern aimed straight for the tower. Manon's grandmother turned then, away from the pit, the acolyte about to leap inside and destroy them all. Asterin hurled her dagger. The blade flew true. It plunged into the acolyte's back, sending the witch sprawling to the stones, a foot away from the drop to the pit. Asterin drew the twin swords from the sheaths at her hips and slammed her wyvern into the side of the tower. The crack of bone on rock echoed across the world. But Asterin was already leaping, already arching through the air, swords raised, wyvern tumbling away beneath, Nareen's body broken on impact. Manon began screaming then, screaming, endless and wordless, as that thing in her chest, as her heart, shattered. As Asterin landed in the witch tower's open archway, swords swinging at the witches who rushed to kill her. They might as well have been blades of grass, might as well have been mist, for how easily Asterin cut them down, one after another, driving forward, toward the matron who had branded the letters on stark display across Asterin's abdomen. Unclean. Twirling, twisting, blades flying, Asterin slaughtered her way toward Manon's grandmother. The High Witch of the Blackbeak clan backed away, shaking her head. Her mouth moved as if she breathed, "Asterin, no." But Asterin was already there. And it was not darkness, but light. Light, bright and pure as the sun on snow, that erupted from Asterin. Light, as Asterin made the yielding. As the 13, their broken bodies scattered around the tower in a near circle, made the yielding as well. Light. They all burned with it, radiated it. Light that flowed from their souls, their fierce hearts, as they gave themselves over to that power, became incandescent with it. Asterin tackled the Blackbeak matron to the ground, Manon's grandmother little more than a shadow against the brightness. Then little more than a scrap of hate and memory, as Asterin exploded. As she and the 13 yielded completely, and blew themselves and the witch tower to smithereens. Chapter 90. Manon sank to the stones of the castle battlements and did not move for a long, long while. She didn't hear those who spoke to her, who touched her shoulder, didn't feel the cold. The sun arced and descended. At some point, she lay down upon the stones, curled against the wall. When she awoke, a wing had covered her, and warm breath whispered across her head as Abraxos dozed. She had no words in her, nothing but a ringing silence. Manon got to her feet, easing past the wing that had shielded her. The dawn was breaking, and where that witch tower had stood, where the army had been, only blasted earth remained. Morath had drawn back, far back. The city and walls still stood. She roused Abraxos with a hand to his side. He couldn't fly, not yet. So they walked together, down the battlement steps, out through the castle gates and into the city streets beyond. She didn't care that others followed, more and more of them. The streets were filled with blood and rubble, all of it gilded by the rising sun. She didn't feel the warmth of that sun on her face while they walked through the southern gate and onto the plain beyond. She didn't care that someone had opened the gate for them. At her side, Abraxos nudged aside piles of Volg soldiers, clearing a path for her, for all those who trailed in their wake. It was so quiet, inside her and on the plain. So quiet and empty. Manon crossed the still battlefield, didn't stop until she reached the center of the blast radius, until she stood in its heart. Not a trace of the tower, or those who had been in it, around it, even the stones had been melted into nothing. Not a trace of the 13, or their brave, noble wyverns. Manon fell to her knees. Ashes rose, fluttering, soft as snow as they clung to the tears on her face. Abraxos lay beside her, his tail curling around her while she bowed over her knees and wept. Behind her, had she looked, she would have seen Glennis and Bronwyn, Petra Blueblood, Adian Ashriver and Lysandra and Renal's Brook, Prince Galen and Captain Rolf, and Ansel of Briarcliff, Ilias and the Fey Royals beside them. Had she looked, she would have seen the small white flowers they bore, would have wondered how and where they had gotten them in the dead heart of winter. Had she looked, she would have seen the people gathered behind them, so many they streamed all the way to the city gates, would have seen the humans standing side by side with the Crokins and Iron Teeth. All come to honor the 13. But Manon did not look, even when the leaders who had come with her, walked with her all this way, began to lay their flowers upon the blasted, bloodied earth. Even when their tears flowed, dropping into the ashes alongside their offerings of tribute. They didn't speak, and neither did the streaming line of people who came after them. A few bore flowers, but many brought small stones to lay on the site. Those who had neither laid down whatever personal effects they could offer, until the blast site was covered, as if a garden had grown from a field of blood. Glennis stayed until the end. And when they were alone on the silent battlefield, Manon's great-grandmother put a hand on her shoulder and said quietly, her voice somehow distant,
"Be the bridge. Be the light. When iron melts, when flowers spring from fields of blood, let the land be witness and return home."
Manon didn't hear the words, didn't notice when even Glennis returned to the city looming at her back. For hours, Manon knelt on the battlefield, Abraxos at her side, as if she might stay with them, her 13, for a little while longer. And far away, across the snow-covered mountains, on a barren plain before the ruins of a once great city, a flower began to bloom.
Chapter 91.
Dorian hadn't believed it, hadn't dared to hope for what he saw. A foreign army marching northward, an army he'd grown up studying. There were the Coggins foot soldiers and the Dargon cavalry. There were the legendary Rooks, magnificent and proud, soaring above them in a sea of wings. He'd aimed as close to the head of the army as he could get, wondering which of the royals had come, wondering if Kaol was with them, if the presence of this miraculous army meant his friend had succeeded against all odds. The Rooks had spied him then, chased him, and he'd begun signaling as he'd neared, hoping they'd pause. But then he'd landed at the crossroads. And then he'd seen them. Seen her. Aelin, galloping for him, Rowan at her side, Elide and the others with her. Maeve had believed Aelin had headed to Terrasen. And here she was, with the Coggins army. Aelin's smile faded the moment she grew close, as if she sensed what he bore. "Where's Manon?" was all she asked. "Terrasen," he breathed, panting slightly. "And likely with the Crokins, if it went according to plan." She opened her mouth, eyes wide, but another rider came galloping down the road. The world went quiet. The approaching rider halted. Another, a beautiful woman Dorian could only describe as golden, right behind. But Dorian stared at the rider before him, at the posture of the body, the commanding seat he possessed. And as Kaol Westfall dismounted and ran the last few feet toward Dorian, the King of Otterlin wept. Kaol didn't hide his tears, the shaking that overtook him as he collided with Dorian and embraced his king. No one said a word, though Kaol knew they were all gathered. Knew Irene stood behind him, crying with them. He just held his friend, his brother.
"I knew you'd do it," Dorian said, voice raw. "I knew you'd find a way, for all of it."
The army, the fact that he was now standing. Kaol only gripped Dorian tighter.
"You have one hell of a story to tell yourself."
Dorian pulled back, his face solemn. A story, Kaol realized, that might not be as happy as his own. Yet before whatever doom Dorian carried could fall upon them, Kaol gestured to where Irene had dismounted and now wiped away her tears.
"The woman responsible for this," Kaol said,
motioning to his standing, his walking, to the army stretching down the road.
"Irene Towers, a healer at the Torre Chesme, and my wife."
Irene bowed, and Kaol could have sworn a flicker of sorrow darkened Dorian's eyes. But then the king was taking Irene's hands, lifting her from her bow. And though that sorrow still edged his smile, Dorian said to her,
"Thank you."
Irene went scarlet. "I've heard so much about you, your majesty." Dorian only winked, a ghost of the man he'd been before.
"All bad things, I hope?"
Irene laughed, and the joy on her face, the joy that Kaol knew was for both of them, made him love her all over again.
I have always wanted a sister,
Dorian said, and leaned to kiss Irene on either cheek.
Welcome to Otterlin, lady.
Irene's smile turned softer, deeper, and she laid a hand on her abdomen. Then you shall be pleased to hear that you'll soon be an uncle.
Dorian whirled to him.
Kaol nodded, unable to find the words to convey what flooded his heart. But Dorian's smile dimmed as he faced where Aelin now leaned against a tree, Rowan and Elide beside her.
I know,
Aelin said. And Kaol knew she didn't mean about the pregnancy.
Dorian closed his eyes, and Kaol laid a hand on his king's shoulder at whatever burden he was about to reveal.
I retrieved the third from Morath,
Dorian said. Kaol's knees buckled, and Irene was instantly there, an arm around his waist.
The word keys?
Kaol asked Dorian.
You have all three now?
Dorian nodded once. A look from Rowan had his cadre peeling off to make sure none of the army got close enough to hear.
I snuck into Morath to get the third,
Dorian said.
Holy gods,
Aelin breathed. Kaol just blinked.
That was the easy part,
Dorian said, paling. The Khaganate royals emerged from the ranks, and Dorian smiled at Nezrin, then nodded to the royals. Introductions would come later.
Maeve was there,
Dorian said to Aelin. Flame danced at Aelin's fingertips as she rested her hand atop Goldrin. The fire seemed to sink into the blade, the ruby flickering.
I know,
she said quietly. Dorian's brows rose. Aelin just shook her head, motioning him to continue as the cadre returned.
Maeve discovered my presence and...
Dorian sighed, and the whole story came tumbling out. When he was done, Kaol was glad Irene had kept her arm around his waist.
Silence fell,
thick and taut. Dorian had destroyed Morath.
I have little doubt, Dorian admitted, that both Erewhon and Maeve survived Morath's collapsing. It likely only served to enrage them.
It didn't stop Kaol from marveling at his friend, the others gawking.
Well done,
Lorcan said, scanning the king from head to toe.
Well done indeed.
Aelin let out an impressed whistle. I wish I could have seen it, she said to Dorian, shaking her head. Then she turned to Rowan. Your uncle and Essar came through then. They kicked Maeve to the curb. The Fey Prince snorted.
You said your letter was strongly worded. I should have believed you.
Aelin sketched a bow. Kaol hadn't the faintest idea what they were talking about, but Rowan went on.
So if Maeve cannot be queen of the Fey, she will find herself another throne.
Bitch,
Fenris spat. Kaol was inclined to agree.
Our worst fears have been confirmed then,
Prince Sartak said, glancing to his siblings.
A Volg king and queen united.
A nod toward Elide.
Your uncle did not lie.
Maeve has no army now,
Dorian reminded them.
Just her power.
Nezrin cringed.
The hybrids she created with the princesses might be disaster enough.
Kaol glanced to Irene, the woman who held the greatest weapon against the Volg within her own body.
When did you leave Morath?
Rowan asked.
3 days ago,
Dorian said. Rowan turned to Aelin, ashen-faced as she remained leaning against the tree. Kaol wondered if she did so only because her own legs might not be able to support her.
Then, at least we know that Erewhon has not yet come to Terrasen. His Iron Teeth host went ahead of him,
Dorian said.
We know,
Kaol said.
They're already at Orinth.
Dorian shook his head.
That's impossible.
They left soon after I did. I'm surprised you didn't see them flying past in the runes.
Silence. The full Iron Teeth host isn't yet at Orinth, Aelin said softly. Too softly.
I counted over 1,000 in the host that I flew with, Dorian said. Many bore soldiers with them, all Volg.
Kaol closed his eyes, and Irene's arm tightened around him in silent comfort. We knew the Rukin would be outnumbered anyway, Nezrin said.
There won't be anything left of Terrasen for the Rukin to defend,
Prince Caution said, rubbing his jaw.
Even if the Krokins arrived before us.
The Queen of Terrasen pushed off from the tree at last. We have 2 choices, then, she said, her voice unwavering despite the hell that swept upon them. We continue north as fast as we can, see what there is to fight when we arrive at Terrasen. I might be able to bring down a good number of those wyverns.
And the other option? Princess Hasar asked.
Aelin's face was stark. We have the 3 word keys. We have me. I can end this now. Or at least take Erewhon out of play before he can find us, steal those keys back, and rule over this world and all others.
Rowan started, shaking his head. But Aelin held up a hand, and even the Fey Prince stood down.
It's not my choice alone. And Kaol realized that it was indeed a queen standing before them. Not the assassin he'd dragged out of a salt mine a few miles down the road. Not even the woman he'd seen in Rifthold.
Dorian squared his shoulders.
The choice is also mine.
Slowly. So slowly. Aelin looked at him.
Kaol braced himself. Her voice was deadly soft as she said to Dorian,
You retrieved the 3rd key. Your role in this is done.
Like hell it is, Dorian said, sapphire eyes flashing. The same blood, the same debt, flows in my veins.
Kaol's hands curled at his sides as he fought to keep his mouth shut. Rowan seemed to be doing the same as the 2 rulers squared off. Aelin's face remained unmoved, distant.
You're so eager to die?
Dorian didn't retreat.
Are you?
Silence. Utter silence in the clearing. Then Aelin shrugged, as if the weight of entire worlds didn't hang in the balance. Regardless of who will put the keys back into the gate, this is a fate that belongs to all of us. So all of us should decide. Her chin lifted. Do we continue on to war, hope we make it to Orinth in time and then destroy the keys? Or do we destroy the keys now, and then you continue northward?
A pause, horrible and unbearable.
Without me. Rowan was shaking, whether with restraint or in dread, Kaol couldn't tell. Aelin said, unwavering and calm, I would like to put it to a vote.
A vote?
Rowan had never heard of anything so absurd. Even as part of him glowed with pride that she had chosen now, here, as the moment when that new world she had promised would rise. A world in which a few did not hold all the power, but many. Beginning with this most vital choice, this unbearable fate. All of them had moved farther down the road, and it was not lost on Rowan that they stood at a crossroads, or that Dorian and Aelin and Kaol stood in the heart of that crossroads, merely a few miles from the salt mines, where so much of this had begun just over a year ago. There was a dull roar in Rowan's ears as the debate raged. He knew he should fall on his knees and thank Dorian for retrieving the 3rd key. But he hated the king all the same. He hated this path they'd been put on 1,000 years ago. Hated that this choice lay before them, when they had already fought so much, given so much.
Prince Caution was saying,
We march on 100,000 enemy troops, possibly more.
That number will not change when the word gate is closed. We will need the Firebringer to cut through them.
Princess Hasar shook her head. But there is the possibility of that army's collapse should Erewhon vanish. Cut off the beast's head, and the body could die.
That's a big risk to take,
Kaol said, his jaw tight.
Erewhon's removal from all this might help, or it might not. An enemy army this big, full of Volg who might be eager to fill his place, could be impossible to stop at this point.
Then why not use the keys? Nezrin asked. Why not bring the keys north and use them, destroy the army, and—
The keys cannot be wielded, Dorian cut in. Not without destroying the bearer. We're not entirely sure a mortal could withstand the power.
He nodded toward Aelin, silent and watchful, while it took all of Rowan's training not to hurl up his guts.
Just putting them back in the gate requires everything, he added tightly, from one of us.
Rowan knew he should be arguing against this, should be bellowing. Dorian went on.
I should do it. No.
The word broke from Kaol and Aelin, her first word since this debate had begun. But it was Fenris who asked Kaol, voice deadly soft.
You'd rather my queen die than your king?
Kaol stiffened.
I'd rather neither of my friends die. I'd rather none of this happen.
Before Fenris could snarl his answer, Irene cut in.
So when the lock is forged and the word gate is sealed, the gods will be gone?
Good riddance, Fenris muttered.
But Irene stiffened at the casual dismissal and put a hand over her heart.
I love Silba, dearly. When she is gone from this world, will my powers cease to exist?
She gestured to the gathered group.
Doubtful, Dorian said. That cost, at least, was never demanded.
What of the other gods in this world? Nezrin asked, frowning. The 36 of the Khaganate, are they not gods as well? Will they be sent away, or just these 12?
Perhaps our gods are of a different sort, Princess Hasar mused.
Can they not help us, then? Irene asked. Sorrow for the goddess who had blessed her still darkening her golden eyes.
Can they not intervene?
There are indeed other forces at work in this world, Dorian said, touching Damaris's hilt.
The god of truth. That's who had blessed Gavin's sword.
But I think, if those forces had been able to aid us in this manner, they would have done so already.
Aelin tapped her foot on the ground.
Expecting divine handouts is a waste of our time, and not the topic at hand.
She fixed her burning stare on Dorian.
We are also not debating who shall pay the cost.
Why?
Rowan's low question was out before he could halt it. Slowly, his mate turned toward him.
Because we're not.
Sharp, icy words. She cut Dorian a look, and the King of Otterlin opened his mouth.
We're not, she snarled.
Dorian opened his mouth again, but Rowan caught his eye, held his stare and let him read the words there.
Later. We shall debate this later.
Whether Aelin noted their silent conversation, whether she beheld Dorian's subtle nod, she didn't let on. She only said,
We don't have time to waste on endless debate.
Lorcan nodded.
Every moment we have all three keys is a risk of Erewhon finding us and finally gaining what he seeks. Or Maeve,
he added, frowning.
But even with that, I would go north. Let Aelin put a dent in Morath's legions.
Be objective, Aelin growled. She surveyed them all.
Pretend you do not know me. Pretend I am no one and nothing to you. Pretend I am a weapon. Do you use me now or later?
You are not no one, though.
Elide said quietly.
Not to a good many people.
The keys go back in the gate, Aelin said a bit coldly. At some point or another, and I go with them. We are deciding whether that is now or in a few weeks.
Rowan couldn't bear it. To hear another word.
No.
Everyone halted once more. Aelin bared her teeth.
Not doing anything isn't an option.
We hide them again,
Rowan said.
He lost them for thousands of years. We can do it again.
He pointed to Irene.
She could destroy him all on her own.
That is not an option, Aelin growled. Irene is with child.
I can do it,
Irene said, stepping from Kaol's side. If there's a way, I could do it. See if the other healers could help.
There will be Volg by the thousands for you to destroy or save, Lady Westfall,
Aelin said with that same cold.
Erewhon could slaughter you before you even get the chance to touch him.
Why are you allowed to give up your life for this, and no one else? Irene challenged.
I'm not the one carrying a child within me.
Irene blinked slowly.
Hafiza might be able to—
I will not play a game of what-ifs and mights, Aelin said, in a tone that Rowan had heard so rarely. That queen's tone.
We vote. Now.
Do we put the keys back in the gate immediately? Or continue to Terrasen? And then do it if we are able to stop that army.
Erewhon can be stopped,
Irene pushed, unfazed by the queen's words, unafraid of her wrath.
I know he can. Without the keys, we can stop him.
Rowan wanted to believe her. Wanted more than anything he'd ever desired in his life to believe Irene Westfall. Kaol, glancing at Dorian, seemed inclined to do the same. But Aelin pointed at Princess Hasar.
How do you vote?
Hasar held Aelin's stare. Considered for a moment.
I vote to do it now.
Aelin just pointed to Dorian.
You?
Dorian tensed, the unfinished debate still raging in his face. But he said,
Do it now.
Rowan closed his eyes. Barely heard the other rulers and their allies as they gave their replies. He walked to the edge of the trees, prepared to run if he began to vomit. Then Aelin said,
You're last, Rowan.
I vote no. Not now. Not ever.
Her eyes were cold, distant, the way they'd been in Mistward.
It's decided, then,
Kaol said quietly. Sadly.
At dawn, the lock will be forged, and the keys go back into the gate.
Dorian finished. Rowan just stared and stared at his mate.
His reason for breathing?
Elide asked softly.
What is your vote, Aelin?
Aelin tore her eyes from Rowan, and he felt the absence of that stare like a frozen wind as she said,
It doesn't matter.
Chapter 92 Aelin didn't say that asking them to vote hadn't just been about letting them decide, as free peoples of the world, how to seal its fate. She didn't say that it had also been a coward's thing to do. To let someone else decide for her. To choose the road ahead. They camped that night at Endovir, the salt mines a mere 3 miles down the road. Rowan made them set up their royal tent, their royal bed. She didn't eat with the others, could barely touch the food Rowan laid on the desk. She was still sitting in front of it. Roast rabbit now cold, poring over those useless books on word marks, when Rowan said from across the table,
I do not accept this.
I do.
The words were flat, dead, as she would be before the sun had fully risen. Aelin shut the ancient tome before her. Only a few days separated them from Terrasen's border. Perhaps she should have agreed to do this now, but on the condition that it was on Terrasen soil. Terrasen soil, rather than by Endovir. But every passing day was a risk. A terrible risk.
You have never accepted anything in your life,
Rowan snarled, shooting to his feet and bracing his hands on the table.
And now you are suddenly willing to do so?
She swallowed against the ache in her throat, surveyed the books she'd combed through thrice now to no avail. What am I supposed to do, Rowan?
You damn it all to hell!
He slammed his fist on the table, rattling the dishes.
You say to hell with their plans, their prophecies and fates, and you make your own. You do anything but accept this.
The people of Irelia have spoken.
To hell with that, too,
he growled.
You can start your free world after this war. Let them vote for their own damned kings and queens if they want to.
She let out a growl of her own. I do not want this burden for one second longer. I do not want to choose and learn I made the wrong choice in delaying it.
So you would have voted against it, then. You would have gone to Terrasen.
Does it matter? She shot to her feet. The votes weren't in my favor anyway. Hearing that I wanted to go to Orinth to fight one last time would have only swayed them.
You're the one who's about to die. I'd say you get to have a voice in it.
She bared her teeth. This is my fate. Elena tried to get me out of it, and look where it landed her, with a cabal of vengeful gods swearing to end her eternal soul. When the lock is forged, when I close the gate, I will be destroying another life alongside my own.
Elena has had 1,000 years of existence, either living or as a spirit. Forgive me if I don't give a shit that her time has now come to an end, when you only received 20 years.
I got to 20 years because of her. Not even 20. Her birthday was still months away. In a spring, she would not see. Rowan began pacing, his stalking steps eating up the carpet.
This mess is because of her, too. Why should you bear its weight alone?
Because it was always mine to begin with.
Bullshit. It could have as easily been Dorian. He's willing to do it.
Aelin blinked. Elena and Nehemia said Dorian wasn't ready.
Dorian walked into and out of Morath, went toe-to-toe with Maeve, and brought the whole damn place crashing down. I'd say he's as ready as you are.
I won't allow him to sacrifice himself in my stead.
Why?
Because he is my friend. Because I won't be able to live with myself if I let him go.
He said he would do it, Aelin.
He doesn't know what he wants. He's barely emerging from the horrors he endured.
And you aren't?
Rowan challenged, wholly unfazed.
He's a grown man. He can make his own choices. We can make choices without you lording over them.
She bared her teeth. It's been decided. He crossed his arms.
Then you and I will do it. Together.
Her heart stopped in her chest. He went on.
You are not forging the lock alone.
No. Her hands began shaking. That is not an option.
According to whom?
According to me. She couldn't breathe around the thought of him being erased from existence. If it was possible, Elena would have told me. Someone with my bloodline has to pay. He opened his mouth, but beheld the truth in her face, her words. He shook his head.
I promised you we'd find a way to pay this debt together.
Aelin surveyed the scattered books. Nothing. The books, that scrap of hope they'd offered, had amounted to nothing. There isn't an alternative. She dragged her hands through her hair. I don't have an alternative, she amended. No card up her sleeve.
No grand reveal. Not for this.
We don't do it tomorrow, then.
He pushed.
We wait. Tell the others we want to reach Orinth first. Maybe the Royal Library has some texts.
What is the point in a vote if we ignore its outcome?
They decided, Rowan.
Tomorrow it will be over.
The words rang hollow and sickly within her.
Let me find another way.
His voice broke, but his pacing didn't falter.
I will find another way, Aelin.
There is no other way. Don't you understand? All of this, she hissed, arms splaying. All of this has been to keep you alive. All of you.
With you as the asking price. To atone for some lingering guilt.
She slammed a hand atop the stack of ancient books.
Do you think I want to die? Do you think any of this is easy?
To look at the sky and wonder if it's the last I'll see? To look at you and wonder about those years we won't have?
I don't know what you want, Aelin.
Rowan snarled.
You haven't been entirely forthcoming.
Her heart thundered.
I want it to be over, one way or another.
Her fingers curled into fists.
I want this to be done.
He shook his head.
I know. And I know what you went through. That those months in Dorinel were hell, Aelin. But you can't stop fighting. Not now.
Her eyes burned.
I held on for this. For this purpose, so I can put the keys back in the gate.
When Cairn ripped me apart,
when Maeve tore away everything I knew, it was only remembering that this task relied upon my survival that kept me from breaking. Knowing that if I failed, all of you would die.
Her breathing turned uneven, sharp.
And since then? I've been so damned stupid in thinking that perhaps I wouldn't have to pay the debt. That I might see Orinth again.
That Dorian might do it instead. She spat on the ground.